Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Well, we have got a full show for you here today, a packed agenda, but a great one nonetheless. After we wrap up our legislative update featuring both Republican and Democrat leading lawmakers in the second half of this show, we've got two of the speakers that are headlining the Montana Agri Women annual meeting this weekend. Stacy Zinn, the former head of the DEA, and a guy you may not have even heard of yet. He's got an incredible military background, Drew Swedenborg. Two of those Montana Agri Women speakers joining us here in about a half an hour or so. But first up, it's our legislative update every Thursday. Great to have Senate President Matt Regeer out of Kalispell with us on the show. Or shall I say, instead of Mr. President, apparently your new title is Sheriff, the Ethics Sheriff.
Good morning, Aaron. Good morning, Montana. It's unfortunate. We came up here this session and had a lot of good ideas. Still got a lot of them going and going through, but it's been covered with a cloud here, dark storm cloud. Senator Ellsworth and his improprieties and ethics has been a topic that I wish we didn't have to discuss it all up here. But part of our job, too, I think, is not just passing good legislation, good ideas, but upholding the integrity of the Capitol building here, the whole process, the staff, everybody that's involved here. The people of Montana need to trust that that we do have what's best for them. And cleaning up corruption here is a part of the job, just as well as passing legislation. So that's what we're working on here, too.
Yeah, I saw this headline. This was from the Montana Television Network. Legislative Audit Report clears Regeer of waste and abuse in hiring of outside attorney. When I saw that story, when it was first in one of these liberal news outlets, I think it was like the Free Press or one of these, I was like, oh, of course, because the former president has an actual ethics investigation ongoing. Now the media and the Democrats and the backers of the former president had to make it sound like, oh, well, the current guy has one too. Oh, give me a break. I mean, it was just so phony from day one. But Senator Ken Bogner out of Miles City had this quote that our friend David Noble was talking about where he calls you the ethics sheriff, cleaning up some of these ethical things. And so it was funny, though, when I was chatting with you off air about this, you had the best line, but you didn't use it on air. You told me, we don't need no stinking badges. So that was great.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to pull that accent out here this morning.
Well, that's all right. That's why I'm here.
Literally, but
I have no shame.
That's right. Yeah, that's why we all listen, Aaron.
All right.
Well, I'm glad. I'm really glad that you see through it, and I hope the people in Montana do, too. It's retaliatory, and we saw that you go after corruption, and corruption's going to push back.
Hold that thought. We're going to get to the legislative update, talk about the budget debate and much more with Senate President Matt Regeer right after this. Stand by.
You're listening to Montana Talks, bringing truth and freedom to Montana. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
All right, so now that we're in the second half of the legislative session here, the typically quick 90-day fast-moving legislative session, this is when they really start talking budgets, revenue bills, and more. Senate President Matt Regeer, give us an update on how the budget debate is taking shape thus far.
Yeah, so the budget's still in the House just for another week or so. They voted it out of committee, and it's going to the House floor, and then they'll vote on it then, send it over to us. But, yeah, this is the time we start. The grass starts getting a little bit green here. We get some 60-degree weather, and everybody's thinking, how do we wrap this up here and tie a bow on it to go home? So the budget's really close to coming over here to the Senate. I'll be honest, a little disappointed where the budget's at. I mean, a little disappointed in November at the governor's proposed budget, and then even what was added there in the House. And we're about $1 billion over where it was last time, a little over 6% higher. And no efficiencies. That's the other part that keep asking of how do we, I mean, we come in for 90 days. It's really tough for us to do the day-to-day and figure out what programs need to be gone and what programs can stay. But you see the DOGE appetite there at the federal level, and we're just not quite matching that here in Montana. So a lot of work to be done yet here on House Bill 2, see if we can skinny that thing down.
I've had a lot of people say, yeah, let's get a DOGE for Montana. And to a certain extent, you know, the governor's red tape relief initiative was great. You're getting rid of some of that red tape. But yeah, I've got to think there's some spending that could be pared back as well. I mean, tax cuts were great. You know, we had tax cuts last session, tax cuts the session before. I think you lawmakers and the governor will deliver on tax relief again. But what does tax relief do? It brings in more money to the state. Well, maybe some of these things don't need to be funded, so maybe we need a little bit more of a DOGE for Montana. What are some things that could be cut?
I mean, there are, like I said, we're not here the day-to-day, so it's hopefully, I know this is the governor's third budget, and there's really not any efficiencies that I can point to. I mean, there's things like, I know Schweitzer back in the day put in state-run health clinics that are just exclusive to state employees, and there's seven or eight around the state. So the public can't go to them. It's just for state employees. And state employees already have health insurance. Why don't they just go to the hospital like the general public? And we're still funding those state-run health clinics. Things like that, how come we haven't rooted those out, I guess gets a little frustrating. But we'll keep pressing back on that and see where we can find the efficiencies and be responsible with all the tax dollars that we do get here. And we are in a good system. I think we've got, like I said, unprecedented amount of surplus and still revenue coming in, and I am excited about that. That's where the second floor and the Senate agree that we need large tax cuts, and we're just arguing where those tax cuts happen and how big. So that's great that for the people of Montana that we're gonna do some sort of tax relief one way or another.
First off, your idea about why are we giving exclusive elite healthcare, you know, clinics just for state employees? Why can't they go to the same hospitals and clinics the rest of us do? They've got insurance, they'll still be covered. That seems one easy way to deliver efficiency. And then the staff that work at those clinics can help support our other clinics and hospitals that serve the rest of us here in the state. That seems like an easy answer. Tax relief. I don't know if you saw this piece by ZeroHedge.com. They went back and they looked at all the states since the year 2000. Greg Franks sent me this message looking at this ZeroHedge data. Montana now has the second highest percentage drop in income taxes, coming in just slightly behind Iowa. But if we get, you know, what the governor is proposing with an additional drop in income taxes this legislative session, Montana could probably rank the number one for income tax decline in the entire United States in the last 25 years. And so, but the tax cuts worked the last session and the session before. So look forward to seeing you guys do it again.
Yeah, and right there with it, that's a great stat to be up there. Let's get to number one, the biggest drop, and especially doing that without a sales tax. That's what I think has been great here about Montana. I'll say that from the House, the Senate, to the governor, to have done a great job here of doing all this within the guise of not having a sales tax, only having property and income, and being able to drop it like that. So let's keep that rolling.
Yeah, I saw Jonathan Amberian. He does a pretty good job overall for the Montana Television Network. He had a headline, Montana Legislature to consider pair of bills seeking for a public vote on the sales tax. You know, I know, you know, our listeners, you'll get some that support it, some that don't, but it just seems like the voters and polling consistently shows that a sales tax isn't going anywhere. So I guess that when I look at that, it's like, why are you guys even spending time on this? Because the people of Montana have just consistently said no to it.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I guess you can ask them again. I mean, I'm a fan of the ballot of asking the voters, hey, what do you think of concepts like that. So I don't see any harm in asking again, but yeah, I'm with them too. I'm lenient of any sort of new taxes. Government, like I said, we've got enough money. We don't need to be doing that. So.
Less than a minute to go here, about 30, 45 seconds before the next break. President Regeer, anything else you want to share with folks across Montana?
Yeah, I just want to end on a few high notes. I mean, you see, the feds, Make America Healthy Again, we're talking about SNAP benefits and food stamps and getting out all the sugary stuff. And I thought, Senator Zolkoff at Senate Bill 329 just on the floor a few weeks ago that did that exact thing here in Montana, taking the SNAP benefits and saying you can't have Red Bulls and candy bars with them. And so it's good to see that Montana's even leading the curve there on what's happening at the Fed level. We're doing a lot of good things here. And going to finish out strong.
It's the Montana Maha, making America healthy again and not using our taxpayer dollars to subsidize a health crisis. All right, President Regeer, great to hear from you. Thanks for the time.
Tackling the issues that shape our state. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, great to now have Representative Jonathan Carlin on the phone lines with us here for our weekly legislative update. He is the Democrat House Minority Whip out of Missoula, giving us a legislative update. And Representative Carlin, I apologize about last week. I tried to get you on over the phone with me while I was in Plentywood for the Farm Expo, but stinking Windows software updates blocked the software I needed for the show. So I was dancing around trying to get the equipment just up and running, and eventually we did for the Farm Expo. So it still ended up being a great show. But I apologize, we missed you last week. Thanks for being with us this week.
Thanks for having me on, Aaron. And I know that last week it was Ag Week, and that's probably why you were up in Plentywood. And one of the things I did want to talk about was how disappointing it was when House Republicans killed the Farm to Food Bank program, which would support Montana farmers. And they did that on Ag Week with, I think we had 4-H kids, FFA kids, and that's after they killed Right to Repair. And so, you know, I've actually been really disappointed with Republicans not supporting ag more in this state this legislative session.
What was the bill number on the Farm to the Food Bank one?
The Farm to Food Bank, I would have to pull up that bill number, but it was I can get that for you.
Check that one out. I appreciate it. Yeah. Let's see. The budget is kind of where we started with President Regeer. Now that we're in the second half of the legislative session, where do you see the budget debate sitting right now? So the sense that I got from President Regeer was that legislative Republicans want to figure out a way to pare back some spending, to trim some of the spending, even from what Governor Gianforte has proposed. In fact, he claimed that this budget this year is $1 billion more than the last one. What's your thoughts from the Democrat side of the aisle?
So overall, I am pleased with some of the amendments that we were able to make in the House Appropriations Committee, so that what we want to see is our budget focused, you know, as streamlined as possible on things like making sure, you know, we're funding schools. We're I'll give you an example of an amendment that I'm happy about. We're leveraging federal dollars to feed hungry kids during the summer when they're not getting meals at school. We're investing money in after-school programs, mentorship programs. So I'm pleased with the amendments. When it comes to spending, I'll say that I think that that's why we need to, when it comes to, I mean, we're seeing Republicans proposing income tax cuts that are, you know, are targeted to the wealthy, and the state will lose hundreds of millions of dollars. And so if they're really concerned about the state budget, we should stop giving tax cuts to the wealthy.
What is the latest budget surplus estimate right now? I keep hearing that, hey, we've got another, but even though we cut taxes last session, we cut taxes the session before, we continue to deliver budget surpluses. And so it seems like that strategy is working to deliver more revenue, not less. But what's the latest budget surplus right now? And what do you think we should do with that surplus? Give it back to the people, add more spending, or what?
So currently the budget surplus right now in terms of, you know, we still have leftover federal money is about $800 million. Most of that is one-time only money. It's not ongoing revenue. with that money, what I'd like to see us do is invest that money in trust, because what we're able to do with that then is use the interest off of that to pay for services that we don't have to go to the taxpayers and ask. So the way I see it is it's sort of fiscally conservative to save your money, invest your money, and then use it so you can rely less on taxpayers. With some of these tax cut proposals we're seeing now, which I would say are fiscally reckless, some of those will have us by 2029 literally running in the red. And so what I would say is we've got a large surplus right now, but I think some of the proposals from the Republicans are fiscally reckless.
You know, you talk about having a trust fund where you can use the interest payments to then fund other projects. A lot of the arts funding comes because of coal dollars. You know, a lot of these theater groups and some of these arts programs that some of their funding was in question for a little bit there in the state house. Maybe it still is, but really that money comes from coal dollars. That being said, were you pleased to see the Trump administration, you know, give a green light for, you know, the Spring Creek mine to continue operating? Because, you know, those coal dollars will continue to, you know, flood a lot of revenue into the state as well.
You know, I'm not super up on the details of the Spring Creek mine. What I can say is, you know, I believe that regardless of the energy project, so long as it's going through review to make sure that we're not going to be harming clean air or clean water, I think that's good. So as long as that project went through the proper channels to make sure we're protecting folks' air and water, then, you know, so be it. I think it's a good thing. Oh, I was just going to say, you know, on this tax discussion, though, I think that the focus needs to be on property tax relief. And I think that, and I'm hoping that we can deliver that this session. And that's what I'd like to see us focus on rather than some of these reckless income tax proposals.
You know, it was interesting. I was at the MACRS convention yesterday, the Montana Association of County Road Supervisors. So we were talking about, you know, county roads. And one of the things that I found very interesting is that a lot of these counties, they're having to take what were once paved roads and make them gravel roads. And I've got a full story on our website which explains why they're making that decision. But one thing that the director of the Montana LTAP program pointed out was, you know, timber industry built these roads. Timber industry helped pay for these roads. But because our timber industry was destroyed over the last several decades, that's why these roads are running into disrepair. And so, but the bigger picture question that I think is the question laying at the feet of lawmakers, Democrat and Republican alike, is how do we rebuild our industrial base here in Montana? Because that's why, you know, property taxpayers are, you know, such a huge chunk of the revenue, is because we've lost a lot of that industrial base over these last few decades.
Yeah, you know, I couldn't agree with you more. One thing I'll point out is when I talk to business owners and I talk to organizations that represent businesses, they say what they struggle with is childcare, is housing, is affordability for their employees. And so that's why, you know, I and my colleagues, we've got bills on childcare, on housing, because even like I worked at Pyramid Lumber up in Sealy Lake that closed recently. One of the challenges they had was they couldn't find employees that could afford to live in Sealy Lake. And so I would argue that we are working really hard to address those issues so that we can see businesses grow. And I'm hoping we can get more support from the Republican side to address the root causes.
Speaking of housing, I caught up with Representative Larry Brewster and Representative Courtney Sprunger earlier, several different housing and zoning reform bills, and that's been somewhat bipartisan in the past. I know there was another Democrat out of Missoula who voted with Republicans on the housing reform measures. Could you see yourself and some of your fellow Democrats crossing the aisle to team up with, say, the Zolnikoffs or some of the other sponsors, Senator Treibus? I think Senator Boldman out of Missoula, actually a fellow Democrat, one of her bills was one of the pieces of legislation they were highlighting.
Yeah, absolutely. I was a co-sponsor actually on a Republican bill last session that made some broad changes to land use and planning. I will say that where, you know, I generally believe the government closest to the people is best positioned to make decisions. So I've supported kind of broad working with local governments to streamline housing in places that it makes sense. When it comes to some of the real nitty-gritty of zoning and things like that, I want to respect the right, though, of my constituents and folks in the community to make decisions. So I think we need to strike a balance, and I think that we're doing that, and it's been bipartisan, actually.
So I think some of the reforms, if I remember right, you know, it's trying to allow for more multifamily building in some of the cities, and that, and then for a little bit taller of buildings in the cities as well. And I know it's tough because, you know, in Montana, we kind of take pride in the fact that we don't have a ton of high rises, and we all like to have the view, right? But on the other hand, we also like our open space, and if we can free up more housing opportunities in the cities, then that's less people subsidizing the farmland or the ranch land or the wildlife habitat out there in the countryside.
No, exactly, and I think one area which, again, I think has been bipartisan is trying to encourage growth in a more urban core rather than sprawl, because then we lose our ag land, we lose our open spaces. But I would say it's been bipartisan. It's tough, though, because it's a slow process. You know, we make a change in 2023 or this session, and it can take years to really see the impacts of it.
I asked, I was talking with President Regeer from the Senate side. There's a headline about how the Montana legislature is considering a pair of bills seeking a public vote on a sales tax. I just don't see the sales tax going anywhere. I think the people of Montana, polling backs this up, have consistently said no to it. But maybe I'm wrong, but I just think the public consistently says no to a sales tax.
Yeah, and the way I see it is I don't want to be taxing my constituents when they go out to get a hamburger or they go to get a beer. I think that we have the revenue right now. The state has the revenue to provide meaningful long-term property tax relief, to fund our schools, to do the essential functions of government without a sales tax. I think that there's other ways we can derive more money from tourists, but we don't need a sales tax right now. But I think we're going to end up in a precarious spot if we don't rein in some of these tax cuts for the wealthy that the Republicans are pushing.
We've only got about a minute or to go, but I got to ask you about House Bill 275 by Representative Staffman. I'm not sure if you're tracking this one. This would create a driver privilege card. A lot of our listeners have been speaking out. They basically see that as a bill to give a driver privilege card to illegal aliens. Have you been following that debate at all?
Yeah, so we had that debate on the House floor. With that driving privilege card, that's for people that are in this country legally. And so people have different statuses here legally, but let's imagine somebody working a construction job, for example. They're here legally. We want to make sure that those folks are able to get to work, get home. So I think that some of that debate's been taken outside of what that bill actually does. That's not giving anything to people that are not in this country in some form of legal status. I also wanted to say that Farm to Food Bank program, House Bill 649.
649. All right, great. Thanks. I'll write that one down. All right, Representative Jonathan Carlin, the Democrat House Minority Whip, thanks for your time, as always, for our weekly legislative update. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Always fun.
All right, coming up right after this, two great guests in studio. Stacy Zinn, former head of the DEA here in Montana, and this guy's got an incredible military background, great guy, Drew Swedenborg. They're both speaking at the Montana AgriWomen Saturday.
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordland.
Yesterday, the confirmation hearing for Brian Nesvik to lead the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service was held in Washington, D.C. Nesvik recently retired as the director of the Wyoming Game and Fish Department. U.S. Senator John Barrasso of Wyoming shared this testimony at the hearing.
Over the last 4 years, politics has driven much of the agency's decisions rather than following the science. For example, the greater Yellowstone ecosystem population of grizzly bears has been fully recovered for 20 years. Republican administrations, Democratic administrations, all agreed for 20 years. Grizzly bear fully recovered. In my home state of Wyoming, we are proud of its lead role in leading this recovery and investing over $50 million to this end. Brian Nesvik played a large role in advocating for Wyoming and advancing these policies.
Nesvik shared these comments during his confirmation hearing.
I cherish the opportunity to build a strong track record working with ranchers, farmers, sportsmen and women, tribes, and all people who care about natural resources. These people, citizens of our great nation, are the ground level of our government and the foundation of the mission of the service and my personal leadership mission. Respecting values, building effective teams, communicating candidly and transparently, leading by example, and treating all people with dignity and respect are the core tenets of my leadership commitment.
Nesvik's nomination to lead the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is expected to sail through committee and be approved by the U.S. Senate in the coming weeks. I'm Lane Nordland.
Mike Rose.
From Mondakistan to the Flathead,
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, well, you guys know the great Stacy Zinn, so we'll get to Stacy here in a second as well. It's always great whenever we have Stacy Zinn on the show, the former head of the DEA here in Montana. And boy, is there even more news on the illegal immigration, drug arrest front, you name it. Crazy story out of Deer Lodge, Montana. Well, it's not that crazy when we've been following what's going on. Do you guys remember, this was back in, I think, 2019. Do you guys remember when there was a carnival worker who got arrested for groping four women at the fair in Great Falls? You remember that story? And one of them was a 13-year-old girl. And anyway, this carnival worker gets arrested. And then he eventually gets sentenced to prison at the Montana State Prison. Well, I get this tweet yesterday, this post on X, and thanks to Dan Bruner, the former FBI Hispanic gang expert who joined me on the show, he sent me this post on X by ICE, the ICE office down in Salt Lake City, and their Montana sub-office. So they arrested. I can now confirm that the man they arrested is an illegal alien. Because I wasn't sure when I saw the post if the guy was here on some sort of a legal status or not, and they're just deporting him because he got convicted of sex crimes. But I can confirm, I heard back from ICE, that man is an illegal alien. So think about it. Remember the guy who got arrested for, in 2019, so 6 years ago, I guess it would be now, for groping women at the fair in Great Falls. He was an illegal alien then. He's an illegal alien now. Was that fact or was that detail ever reported in the local media? At least not on the reports that I saw. But anyway, what happened was yesterday, ICE sends out this post that they arrested this illegal, they arrested this guy in Deer Lodge. And you look at the arrest photo and you can see a chain link fence and a concertina wire looking wire on top of the fence. And it's like, oh, and then I look, I do a search of the guy's name and it's like, oh yeah, the names match, the dates match. So the sex offender who was arrested in Great Falls, apparently he just got paroled from the Montana State Prison and ICE was there to give him a nice greeting, a nice hello, and then a nice goodbye. He's being deported. So I've got that story on our Montana Talks website right now. But before we get to Stacy Zinn, let me introduce you to a great guy I've gotten to meet here recently, Andrew Swedenborg, retired Marine Corps captain with over a decade of experience in combat, intelligence, and special operations. Drew, great to see you, my friend.
Yeah, good seeing you again, Aaron. Thanks for having me and Stacy.
Yeah, great. Man, I met you at like, you know, an event. You know, somebody was having a barbecue event with some candidates who were giving some talks, and I was like, holy cow, this guy's the real deal. I'm like, man. And then I'm down at the SHOT Show in Las Vegas. You were down at the SHOT Show in Las Vegas. I just got to tell our listeners this. And so you're hanging out down. You're like, hey, man, I'm down at your radio show right now. Where are you at? So I come down and meet you, and you got a crew of Montanans and some other military veterans hanging out. All of a sudden, Matt Best from Black Rifle Coffee Company comes walking by. You know, he's a celebrity, especially in the military community, because he's just hilarious. He made all those legendary Black Rifle Coffee Company videos, and then he's been a movie star as well. Matt Best comes walking by. He greeted you like you were the celebrity in the rooms that day. So I'm like, okay, this guy's definitely got a crazy background. Yeah.
Yeah, it was good times, and I'm glad you made time to come down and talk to us.
Yeah. So what can you tell us about your background? I mean, I know you've operated in over 100 different countries, whether it was you were a police officer for a little while as well.
Yeah, I had a crazy background. I was in the Marine Corps Reserves, and you know how that is. And so to stay on deployments, I just would activate. And under the Obama years, that was all, you know, to be on active duty, you had to do that and do assisting or the foreign assistance. And I think Stacy had some overlapping time with me in Afghanistan as well. Spent about 5 years of my life total in Afghanistan, best years of my life. But jumped around all those countries. And I was finishing my degree, was a police officer. Then the mayor of Detroit actually went to jail. He stole all the city's money. So when I was a cop and going to college and in the Marine Corps Reserves, they were giving us checks, and they're like, you're not getting paid, but you can't cash that check. And so I was like, all right, I'm out of here. And they pink slipped our laid off our entire police academy class. And so after I graduated, I thought the FBI would just hand me a job, and they did not, which I'm thankful for. Yeah. But anyways, and so I just stuck on deployments and have gone on since then to do the technology integration for the intelligence, a couple of intelligence agencies, and yeah, similar work to you.
Crazy. So yeah. you executed clandestine action, missions, hostage rescues,
yes.
Counterterrorism, CT operations. You've been to Pakistan, all sorts of crazy places. But you were in Detroit for the George Floyd riots. What was crazier?
Minneapolis.
Yeah. Worse than Detroit. Yeah. What was worse, Minneapolis during the Floyd riots or Pakistan?
Oh, Minneapolis was absolutely the worst. People don't believe. I sold a lot of my photos that I took off my phone to Fox News. So some of those famous pictures, like the upside down flag of the dude running by a burning building. And I've talked to some of the Democrat folks out in D.C. And they would see the pictures and they'd say, I don't want to see pictures of, you know, you in Fallujah, Iraq and all that. And I'm like, that is Minneapolis. And it was so bad. It was unbelievable.
When they say Little Mogadishu, they mean it.
Yeah, Cedar Street. I grew up two blocks away from there. And yeah, it was, and that wasn't the worst area. The small area, actually, Minneapolis, was kind of exempt from it. It mainly went in St. Paul on Lake or University Street, and then once it hits Minneapolis proper, because it's like the combined Twin Cities, but once you cross the river, that is Lake Street. And so I was there visiting family, actually, and they asked how soon I could be there, and I was like, I'm already here. And we took back Third Precinct because that was the next precinct that they were going to burn after the George Floyd thing. And there was a huge disconnect between, you know, George Floyd died outside Cup, like CUP, grocery store, and they thought it was Cub, like CUB. And so they started burning down. Like, you've probably seen the photos of the famous AutoZone, Target, and I'm trying to think of the other ones, but that's 26th and Lake. And then on the kitty corner of that AutoZone that they burned down was the Third Precinct. And that was literally on fire when we showed up. And me and the state troopers took back Third Precinct. And then there was about 4,000 or 5,000 people from what we could estimate in the parking lot of that combined Target Cub Foods area. So it was,
wow.
It was just wild.
That's crazy. Yeah. You were on like a US DOJ task force during that
time. It's crazy. The Violent Offender Task Force.
Yeah. Crazy. Well, you did some southern border work as well. Definitely want to hear about that. But Stacey's in, the former head of the DEA. So both Drew Swedenborg here and Stacey Zinn are two of the keynote speakers at the Montana Agro Women Annual Meeting. That's this Saturday in Billings at the Clock Tower Inn, and you can get tickets at mtagrowomen.com or Karen Yost. I talked with her earlier this morning. You could even just show up Saturday morning. They'll get you in. They'll get you some tickets. But what a lineup. But Karen was telling me how, you know, the agro women, they not only want to talk ag issues, but they want to talk important issues right here in our own backyard, and they want to get the global perspective as well. So Drew's going to kind of give the global perspective. Stacey Zinn, good to see you as always. What are you going to talk about Saturday?
I'm actually going to talk about local issues that are taking place here in the state of Montana, where it be cartels, where it be fentanyl, the different drugs, but also bring awareness to these women that are branching out from the rural area, going into the big cities, how to protect themselves, what to look for, and also just if they're going to college, the pitfalls that we're seeing now taking place on the campuses.
Well, yeah, really, farm and ranch country right now is cartel country in many instances, because that's where these cartels are operating. Trende Aragua operatives. We just had a big arrest in the Havre, Montana Border Patrol sector. That's farm and ranch country.
Yes, yes. And we need to start, there's times where people are like, oh, I see something, but I don't know what to say. Should I call the officers? And there's confusion because we've gotten so PC. Especially in our rural areas, people are like, oh, I see something strange, but I don't want to make a fuss. No, we need to start making a fuss. If you see something, say something. Profiling has been a negative word, and unfortunately, we need to get back to profiling. It doesn't make you a racist or anything like that, but it alerts people, hey, there's a pink elephant walking down Main Street. Maybe we should draw attention to it.
There's a guy in Wolf Point with half of his face tattooed and the other half not tattooed. There might be something there.
Could be.
I think tattoos are cool, but still, like, there might might be something there.
Absolutely.
And obviously there was.
And yeah. Especially when you talk about tattoos. Tattoos are very symbolic. When you see certain tattoos, like Marilyn Monroe tattoos, that is significant of Mexican Mafia, Eminem. They do things to let other people know they are in the area. Other ones that are keen in on tattoos know, oh, he's representing this gang. Oh, he's representing this cartel. So tattoos are very, very important. Unfortunately, the community just doesn't know what the tattoos are representing.
You know, hearing Drew's story here, you know, like, yeah, oh, yeah, Minneapolis was way worse than Pakistan or even some of these other crazy places. It reminds me of when I first got to chat with you and get to know you about how, oh, hey, I'm with the DEA. I get to go to Montana. Woo! It's like a vacation. It's like a paid vacation. Oh, no, anything but.
This is where I thought I was going to get shot. Of all the places I've been to, and I've been to over 40-something different countries, I thought I was going to get shot in Montana because everyone carries a gun and everyone wants to fight for that gram of meth.
And they nearly got you in Afghanistan if it wasn't for some good signals intelligence.
That is absolutely correct. Two attempts on my life in Afghanistan, one on the southwest border.
But this is the state where you thought it would actually happen. Wow, that's crazy. All right, hold that thought. Quick break here with Montana Talks. Just a few minutes left.
It's
broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
A great military veteran in the house, a great law enforcement veteran in the house, and they're both going to be in the house for the Montana Agro Women annual meeting on Saturday morning. Karen Yost and crew, they always put together a great event. Drew Swedenborg, I was seeing here too, one of the other things you did in your career is you led the Tunnel Task Force for U.S. Border Patrol in San Diego under the Department of Homeland Security. Man, you look at everything that's going on. You were just showing me Kristi Noem was just down in El Salvador where they're sending these criminal illegal aliens. Isn't that just incredible? I mean, the message that sends to these illegal aliens in this country is like, oh, do you want to end up here? It's going to be no more kid gloves treatment like you've been getting in the United States in the last 4 years.
Exactly. It's great messaging, and it's really sending a huge mission. And Kash Patel, I think under the Biden years, they didn't get a single one of the top 10 most wanted with the FBI. And in the last 2 weeks, I believe, since Kash has taken the helm and actually been able to execute, they've caught everyone off that top 10 list.
Yes, but how many peaceful pro-life protesters have they not been detaining, right? You know?
That's
crazy when you think about it, because I've been seeing, yeah, the FBI has been really successful here recently with taking out some, you know, most wanted individuals. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize how long it had been since they've done that, but yeah, they were too busy spying on Catholics and arresting peaceful pro-life protesters and, you know, going through Melania Trump's underwear drawer. I mean, good night.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I always say that local law enforcement knows exactly who all the offenders are, but they don't have, it's not necessarily the tools or equipment, it's the policy and plans that they cannot go out and actually execute. And I'm sure Stacey could talk to that. She's got a lot more years than myself, but they know exactly who the problematic people are in the communities, but they need to have the morale and higher up backup to be able to go out and actually execute those things to make us safe as taxpayers and part of the community.
Yeah. Stacy Zinn, it'd be really fun. I got to be at a volleyball tournament Saturday myself, or I would be there, because it'd be really cool to watch the two of you go back and forth with the Montana Agro Women, and, you know, because they're going to ask some great questions, but it'd be fun to watch the two of you go back and forth with both of your combined experience.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Drew has a wealth of experience, and I can sit here and listen to him all day just talk and share thoughts and stuff like that. I'm excited for these women and individuals who are going to be there, because with his experience and his international experience and then me bringing in and shoring it into how it impacts them in Montana, I think we're going to have a very fun event, and we hope to educate everyone and plant those seeds of safety.
You know, Poplar, Montana, a couple of weeks ago, or last week, actually early last week, there was all this rumor, hey, there was a lockdown on some of these buildings, and the rumor was that some woman got arrested and she was informing on the cartels, so the cartels were going to go break her out of jail so that they could get her. That was the rumor. And apparently, at least according to Fort Peck tribal law enforcement, that wasn't the case. That wasn't what happened. But clearly something is continuing to go on there beyond just the normal conversations we've had about the drug cartels. You've had some more murders there recently involving some younger people. I don't know if it's connected or not, but clearly the people there are very concerned. They've even been holding their own rallies to speak out against violence.
Unfortunately, that reservation is targeted by individuals from the East and the West. You have individuals from the Minneapolis, Chicago area that actively target that reservation in order to supply them with drugs to stay on the reservation, to mingle on the reservation. Then you have the Hispanic population, the cartel-linked individuals coming from the West, Spokane, general area, coming across. Because that reservation is so far away from the major cities, they feel like there's not enough law enforcement up there, which is a little bit lacking, but that is the most robust reservation across Montana that actively has their finger on the pulse and stuff. Now, unfortunately, it's so spread out, but we need the community up there to start seeing that pink elephant and start shouting about it.
Yeah. Drew Swedenborg, what do you want to tell folks across Montana? Anything you want to tell folks here? We only got about a couple minutes to go or so.
Just with perspective on the international affairs, things going on with geopolitics, I think a lot of people in Montana really don't understand the third-order effects of, like, the issue with the Suez Canal and the Houthis in Yemen and the Iranian support there. A lot of the products that are very high-end that you guys deal with in the agricultural community, which is the majority of Montana, come from Europe. We only get about 4% of our logistics through the Suez Canal that affects us, but Europe gets 40%, and that 40% is what provides these high-end products for you guys. And so that really is a third order effect of going to be a cost problem. So them going over there and reining in the Houthis and putting our American service members on the front lines and attacking that threat definitely benefits everyone here in Montana. So yeah, that's the biggest thing I think that people don't really realize.
Yeah, that would be interesting, tying into what's going on in Europe, what's going on in the Middle East, and tying that directly back into how that impacts, you know, agri women on the ground here in Montana. So not just a cartel, TDA, drug problem perspective, illegal alien perspective, but also the national security angle and how it all ties back in. I mean, yeah, it's going to be fascinating. Well, we appreciate both of you for joining us here in studio. And if you go to mtagrowomen.com, you can find out more information or get your tickets or just show up Saturday morning. Karen Yost said that's cool, too. Stacey's in. You got a final 10, 15 seconds you want to share?
No, I just say come on out because everything ties together. You may say, what is the Middle East or what does Europe have to do with Montana? Come out and see how it all ties together. Get the 30,000-foot level and then look at the 10-foot level.
There you go. Oh, Emily Arthen, who grew up in Malta, CEO of the American Coal Council, will be there as well.